Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Let's listen now to some key moments from today's House Judiciary Committee hearing, where members are debating the proposed articles of impeachment against President Trump. Democrats seek to impeach Trump on two charges, abuse of power and obstruction of Congress. But Republicans introduced an amendment to kill the abuse of power charge, prompting Representative David Cicilline, Democrat of Rhode Island, to lay out some of the findings of the impeachment inquiry from the House Intelligence Committee.
The President of the United States hired Rudy Giuliani, his personal lawyer, to go to Ukraine and lead this scheme to smear Vice President Biden. He then began a campaign personally to smear Ambassador Yovanovitch and then ultimately directed that she be fired to clear the way of this anti-corruption champion so that his scheme could be fully implemented. He directed a hold on the military aid to Ukraine, and no one could provide any other explanation unrelated to his scheme to pressure them to interfere in the 2020 election. Then the president, in his own words, on July 25th, gets on the telephone and asks President Zelensky for a favor to begin an investigation of his chief political rival, former Vice President Joe Biden. There's a readout of the call in evidence, which is a detail of this conversation. There's direct evidence from Alexander Vindman, Williams, Mr. Morrison, who listened in on and heard the president utter those words right out of his own mouth, pressuring a foreign leader to corrupt our elections. The president then made admissions in public on October 2nd, October 3rd, and October 4th, then invited another foreign power, China, to interfere in the American presidential election. The chief of staff acknowledged that the president directed him to put this unexplained hold on aid to Ukraine. The president directed the vice president not to attend the inauguration of President Zelensky because he hadn't yet got what he was demanding, a public announcement intended to damage his political opponent. Ambassador Sondland testified that the Ukrainians were told, and I quote, the resumption of U.S. aid would likely not occur until Ukraine provided the public anti-corruption statement that we had been discussing for many weeks. And then he testified that he spoke with President Trump, and while the president claimed there was no quid pro quo, he made it clear that President Zelensky must publicly announce the two investigations that President Trump discussed on July 25th in the call in order for this security assistance to be lifted. That's direct evidence.
Representative Doug Collins of Georgia, the ranking Republican on the Judiciary Committee, called the impeachment process as unfair. He called to dismiss both articles of impeachment, arguing that Democrats have violated the committee's rules.
This is a travesty. Write about it if you want, talk about it if you want, but the American people see it. Because the American people understand inherently fairness. They understand due process. Why? Because it's what America was based on. It is what America takes pride in. And when we don't have it, nobody can have it. When we don't have fairness in this committee, how can they stand up and say, on the two weakest articles of impeachment in the history of this country, honestly, with a straight face, look at the American people and say, we did good. No, you didn't. You stained this body. You've taken this committee and made it a rubber stamp. Did any of the majority run to be a rubber stamp to get the majority? I know the minority on this side did not. You know why I know it's why we've become a rubber stamp? Because my chairman said so 20 years ago. He said so 20 years ago when he said, if the committee only accepts what other people give them and do not on their own verified and thoroughly vet it, then we are nothing but a rubber stamp. Mr. Chairman, you should have run for a chairmanship, I believe, more than to be a rubber stamp for Mr. Schiff and Ms. Pelosi. We already knew this committee was overrun and overtaken because Mr. Schiff and Ms. Pelosi took it from us earlier this year. There's the first embarrassment. And the rest of it has been an embarrassment since. So as we look at this and as we go forward, we'll have plenty of time to show the complete farce of substance. But, Mr. Chairman, what will live from this day is your ruling and the majority's ruling of minority rights are dead in this Congress, and especially this committee. I yield back.
But Representative Ted Deutch, Democrat of Florida, dismissed the process arguments from Collins and other Republicans on the committee.
What I said is that the president was given the opportunity on December 4th to present himself
He was also given the opportunity to present witnesses, and he did not. So let's be careful in the way we suggest that rules are being violated when everything that's being done here is consistent with more than 50 years of interpretation of the rules and the very essence of why the rule was put together in the first place. So it's important. Facts really do matter. And we're not going to allow the minority to misinterpret the rules for their own benefit or to suggest that the history is irrelevant.
In addition to criticizing the process, Republicans also contested Democrats' grounds for impeachment. Representative Steve Chabot, Republican of Ohio, took aim at the abuse of power charge, saying it didn't meet the constitutional definition of high crimes or misdemeanors.
The majority on this committee goes to great lengths to explain why abuse of power is an impeachable offense, specifically mentioning it was one of the charges against both Richard Nixon and Bill Clinton. What they don't mention is that the House of Representatives has never adopted alleged abuse of power as a charge in a presidential impeachment. Why? Because there's no criminal statute describing what alleged abuse of power actually is. Abuse of power is therefore a vague, ambiguous term open to the interpretation of every individual. Because abuse of power lacks a concise legal definition, there's a higher burden of proof on those pursuing such a charge to show the actions of the president rise to the level of impeachment. I believed that Bill Clinton had abused the power of his office, but we failed to convince our colleagues in the House, and that particular charge was rejected by the full House. In this case, the evidence provided is less convincing. In fact, I'd argue it's non-existent. First, there was no quid pro quo. Second, it's a widely known fact that Ukraine is one of the most corrupt countries on the planet. It's why Congress required the administration to certify that the Ukrainian government had taken steps to clean up corruption before military aid could be provided to the country. President Trump was well aware of that fact and quite skeptical of giving Ukraine foreign aid long before the now famous July 25th phone call. Third, Ukraine actually received the aid after the president was satisfied that Ukraine had taken meaningful steps to address corruption, which again is an obligation required by law. Based on the actual facts of this case, as opposed to the hearsay and innuendo compiled by the Intelligence Committee, it's clear that no abuse of power ever took place, and there certainly isn't enough evidence to support an article of impeachment.
But Democrats kept going back to what Representative Cicilline called the overwhelming evidence of President Trump's abuse of power. Representative Veronica Escobar of Texas made the case for impeachment with an analogy.
I want to break this down in simple terms for the American public because our Republican colleagues are working overtime to try to convince us that we didn't see what we saw with our own eyes and we didn't hear what we heard with our own ears. Let's bring it down to an example that was used during the hearing. If a governor, if a community suffers a natural disaster, and the governor of the state has aid that will help that community, but calls the mayor of your community and says, "I want you to do me a favor, though," and conditions with giving the aid to the community on the police chief smearing his political opponent, has there been a crime? The answer is yes. And that governor would go to jail. If that governor later releases the aid after he got caught, it doesn't matter. He still committed the crime. Furthermore, if that governor says during the investigation, "I'm going to defy the subpoenas, we're going to fight the subpoenas," guess what would happen to that governor? He's committed a crime. He would go to jail. If the governor then tried to cover up his wrongdoing, cover it up so that his people, his constituents, couldn't see his wrongdoing, what would happen to that governor? Did he commit a crime? Yes, he would go to jail. So as wildly as they're trying to convince you that there was no wrongdoing, I want the American public to understand what is going on here. It's clear as day. We've seen it with our own eyes. We've heard it with our own ears. Facts matter. I yield back.
The House Judiciary Committee is expected to approve the articles of impeachment tonight, which could lead to an historic impeachment vote in the full House next week. We'll be following this story.